Thanks for joining us.
Israeli warplanes keep hammering the Gaza Strip neighborhood by neighborhood, reducing the fully blockaded Palestinian territory to rubble. Over 2,700 Palestinians, including more than 1,000 children, have been killed in 9 days of relentless bombardments by the regime. About 10,000 others have been wounded. Their airstrikes continue, as Israel has ordered over 1 million Palestinians in the northern part of Gaza to move south. The humanitarian situation is also deteriorating by the hour, as the regime has blocked the supply of water, electricity, fuel, and medicines into the territory. The UN chief has urged Israel to allow rapid and unimpeded humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip. The UN Relief and Works Agency has also warned that Gaza is witnessing an unprecedented human catastrophe.
The number of people seeking shelter in our school and other UNRWA facilities in the south is absolutely overwhelming, and we do not have any more the capacity to deal with them. My team will relocate to Rafah to sustain operation following the Israeli ultimatum, is working in the same building as thousands of desperate displaced people, rationing also their food and their water. In fact, an unprecedented humanitarian catastrophe is unfolding under our eyes.
The UN agency says some 1 million Palestinians have been displaced since the Israeli assaults began. Meanwhile, Israel has stationed thousands of troops and heavy weapons near the Gaza border. The Arab League and African Union have warned that the regime's possible ground invasion could result in, quote, a genocide of unprecedented proportions. Palestinian resistance groups have launched more attacks against Israel, retaliation for the regime's bombardment of the Gaza Strip. The military wing of Hamas resistance movement, the Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades, launched missiles at the city of Tel Aviv. The cities of Sderot and Shlomi were targeted as well. The Qassam brigades also hit a gathering of Israeli soldiers in Raim region with missiles. Hamas had previously stated that it can target anywhere in the Israeli territories. Palestinian resistance fighters entered the Gaza envelope area on October 7th, following missile strikes on Israeli targets under the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Over 1,400 Israelis have been killed and 3,400 injured since then. Hamas says it launched a military campaign in response to repeated Israeli desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and the regime's crimes and aggression throughout the decades. Geopolitical analyst Ryan Dawson says the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood has been a response to Israeli crimes against Palestinians.
They had murdered almost 200 people before this war started during peacetime. They already annexed property and abused these people every day. And the stories always started in the middle with this conflict of Hamas attacking out of the blue. They never mentioned flooding the mosque with rabbis who thought that this would be a good idea to go to a holy site and desecrate it. Hamas has named his operation after that stunt. None of those men have been arrested for creating this provocation. International media is still running with the 40 dead babies propaganda, and this kind of sick hasbara is used to justify killing Palestinian civilians, but it's not new. In all these conflicts, they bomb apartments and agricultural centers, they blew up the university, they blow up water treatment centers, and they collectively punish Palestinians. To use artillery and fighter jets on apartments is a war crime. People haven't behaved like this since the Second World War. Even in that long conflict in Ukraine and Russia, Russia did not carpet bomb apartments. You can't do that. You cannot collectively punish people to react to Hamas, who's reacting to you, occupying the land and murdering almost 200 people this year during quote unquote peace, desecrating the mosque, holding a blockade, bulldozing homes, sniper shooting kids every Friday for sport.
Surgeon with international medical charity Doctors Without Borders gives the horrific details of a hospital in Gaza which is overwhelmed with injured in relentless Israeli attacks. Dr. Ghassan Abu Sata says Israelis are trying to force the closure of hospitals and the collapse of the health system in Gaza.
I'm currently at Shifa Hospital. The situation here is absolutely catastrophic. There is an impending public health catastrophe. There are thousands, if not tens of thousands, of people who have sought refuge in the hospital, in the grounds, but also inside the hospital, in the stairwells, in the corridors, in the wards between the patient beds. The staff numbers are dwindling because of the fact that some people can no longer get to the hospital safely. Some people have decided that they need to be with their families, and some people have lost families, and some people have been killed. There's over 150 patients who need to go to surgery and can't. And we're now seeing the consequences of delayed surgery in patients that have not been able to go to the operating room. My colleagues had to repair someone's face under local anesthetic because there is no access to an operating room, because there are all the available rooms and anesthetists were busy. The Israelis are trying to force the closure of many hospitals, particularly in the north, and they're calling the hospital directors and threatening to target these hospitals in order to force a collapse. The Israelis are trying to force a collapse in the health system as part of the pressure on Palestinian society. Unless the humanitarian community intervenes, unless there's a humanitarian corridor to supply the hospitals and to evacuate the wounded, unless there's a cessation to the bombing, then this place is heading to absolute disaster.
The Iranian president has strongly condemned Israel's policy of forcing the people of Gaza from their homes in the northern part of the Palestinian territory. Ebrahim Raisi says the regime's policy is a blatant violation of all international laws and humanitarian principles. Addressing a cabinet session, Raisi also slammed the silence of some governments and international organizations in the face of Israel's unprecedented crimes. He said supporting the oppressed people of Palestine is the unwavering policy of the Islamic Republic. In an earlier phone conversation with his French counterpart, Emmanuel Macron, Raisi said Israel's actions against Palestinians are reminiscent of the Nazis' behavior. He added that the ongoing operation by resistance groups is a reaction to 7 decades of killing, oppression, and injustice towards Palestinians. Iran's foreign minister has strongly condemned Israel's brutal attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip, saying the regime's measures against Palestinians amount to war crimes. Hossein Amir Abdollahian was speaking in a phone call with his Chinese counterpart, Wang Yi. He said the regime is using banned munitions, including phosphorus bombs, against Gazans while cutting their access to water, electricity, and fuel. Iran's top diplomat added that Israel is also destroying Gaza's civilian structures and hospitals. He warned that the situation in the Palestinian territory is very dire, which can get out of hand and spread beyond Gaza at any moment. China's top diplomat, for his part, said the international community should slam Israeli attacks on civilians. He also urged the UN Security Council to fulfill its responsibility in this regard. Tim Anderson is the director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, joining us from Sydney. Welcome, Tim Anderson. Trying to make out some of the announcements that were made and what the facts are. For example, there was an announcement made that Israel has allowed water to be allowed into the southern part of the Gaza Strip. People are saying that is just impossible. All the pipes are practically ruined, and in order for the pipes, water to flow into the pipes, there needs to be some kind of motor to push the water through, but yet there's no electricity or any type of gas or anything to make the motors work. So they're saying that that's a lie. Do you think that that's a lie?
Look, it reminds me really of the so-called humanitarian exceptions to unilateral criminal sanctions against many states these days. They say they have these exceptions, but really they're so theoretical, they don't amount to anything, basically. For example, the Israelis have been bombing traffic going down to the southern part of the Gaza Strip, you know, so that's a trap that many people have realized, you know, they don't want to step into. So they can't just say that they're allowing this there. This is, of course, one of the heads of war crimes, which is being discussed now by a conservative MP in Britain, saying that all of these Western leaders, they're not being silent. They're openly endorsing and encouraging the Israeli crimes and crimes that are planned into the future, including the planned ground invasion, which has been deferred for some sort of reason now, but also the complete siege, of cutting off of electricity and water and food and so on, that they are clear war crimes, and that's why this Conservative MP, Crispin Blunt, says that there's a case for prosecuting the leader of his own party, the British Prime Minister, and of course the same would apply in my country. You know, so at least that's a discussion there. I don't think there's going to be a real constraint at the moment on what the Western powers are doing. That's also why, of course, we can't expect much from the Security Council. Although Russia and China are moving in the direction of supporting the Palestinian people, we know there's that veto that the three NATO states have in the Security Council. You know, so the real restraint is unfortunately a military one. And of course, the Zionists have been talking about this ground invasion. They've deferred it for some supposedly to do with the weather. But really, it seems like that they are anticipating they're going to have huge casualties if they go in. It's one thing bombing from the air, but if they go in on the ground, they're going to have huge casualties. Second of all, if there's a counter, if there's an offsetting problem they have to deal with in the north from Hezbollah or from the Syrian divisions that are in the north there, that's going to take away from their operations there. So I think the Israelis are very nervous about this much vaunted ground invasion. I think the more caution, the more deterrence that can be said internationally, the better about this.
There are many who have said that Israel is going to actually fall into a trap because they say there's no way that they can win it. For example, one analyst with some military background says that the fighters are going to use their tunnel network in order to get them behind the attack or to attack in all directions and to make it very difficult for Israel to effectively have any kind of advantage. But then there are some that say, no, you have the U.S. there that's going to help Israel because they want to make sure that the Gaza Strip is going to be rid of the Hamas fighters. Do you still believe that, do you still think that Israel is going to go through with this ground invasion but is trying to find the right time?
They might like to, but the thing is, apparently they did some studies on this, anticipating some ground operations, including in the north with the Lebanese resistance, and they concluded they were going to lose there. They can't handle large casualties. The last invasion of Lebanon showed that in 2006. They had far fewer casualties than the Lebanese, but they couldn't stand the level of casualties they were having, and that's why they withdrew without any of their objectives being met. So now if the US helps them, it's going to be just bombing from the air and missiles. That's all the U.S. is capable of doing. The U.S. is also very sensitive to this idea they're going to have body bags coming home. They want someone else to fight their wars. They've got missiles, they've got planes, but they're not going to go into a ground invasion there. So the Israelis will have no help there, basically. And I think Netanyahu, for all his, the terrible things that he does and the things that he wants to do and the things he doesn't mind doing, even killing his own prisoners of war that are being held in Gaza. They've said that they're going to go ahead unless they know for sure that there are prisoners of war in certain places. They don't really care about their own people to that extent. But I think he must know that the casualties are going to be huge. You know, that's just a reality. A ground fighting in that very densely populated area with lots of rubble and tunnels, as you say, is going to be a huge literal minefield for the doing that. But at least they are not going to have the level of casualties they would with a ground invasion.
If we can clarify for us whether Israel can act on its own, or is it, I don't want to say taking orders, but needs to have the U.S. on board or for the U.S. to give it a green light when it comes down to the way that it's handling or how it's proceeding when it comes to this war. For example, is the U.S. Giving Israel the green light to go ahead with what it has done in terms of this bombing of the Gaza Strip? We heard what Lloyd Austin said, military chief, that we're going to support Israel however way they want to carry out their campaign. This was going back now 4 days ago. Since then, there's so many casualties that have accrued on the Palestinian side. But overall, is this all in sync with the U.S. and with the approval of the U.S.?
I think it is, although, and of course, I believe, generally speaking, strategically, the U.S. calls the shots with the Israelis. After all, Israel belongs to the U.S. effectively. It's a fully subsidized armed colony, first of the British and then of the U.S. And although they may have their own will in some respects, but they're always paranoid of being abandoned. They're very concerned about being abandoned at any stage. So that's why their enormous loyalty with the U.S. in all of the matters in the United Nations, for example. But having said all that, we know, everyone knows that there's a great deal of dislike between the Biden administration and Netanyahu. He would much prefer to have a smooth-talking liberal, someone who was, a more acceptable face of Zionism in that region there as their proxy, as their colony, basically. And in some respects, I think Netanyahu is nervous for his own survival with the U.S. there, because they'd like to replace him. They'd certainly like to replace him, even though now they're saying publicly all of this, we're with you to the end and we support you fully, which of course puts them back into that war crime situation, doesn't it? They're inciting, they're encouraging, they're making themselves complicit in the Israeli crimes, what they're doing now. We don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, but it is clear that the Biden administration would rather have someone else there in Tel Aviv.
And that is it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. The Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, said on Friday, 13th October, that the situation in the Gaza Strip had reached a dangerous new low after Israel warned 1.1 million residents of northern Gaza to flee to the south following days of airstrikes on the embattled territory. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of CNN, the cable news network, has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations described the situation in the Gaza Strip as a matter of life and death, warning that the clean water supply for the 2 million people living there is running dangerously low. The United Nations also warned of increasing risk of waterborne diseases in Gaza. The Commissioner General of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East, UNRWA, Philip Lazzarini, said in a statement on Saturday, 14th of October, "It has become a matter of life and death. It is a must. Fuel needs to be delivered now into Gaza to make water available for 2 million people living there." Philip Lazzarini highlighted the devastating impact of the blockade on the Gaza Strip, which has received no fresh humanitarian aid for 1 week now. The statement said, "Clean water is running out in the Gaza Strip after its water plant and public water networks stop working altogether. People are now forced to use dirty water from wells, increasing risk of waterborne diseases. Gaza has also been under an electricity blackout since 11th of October, impacting the water supply in Gaza. UNRWA was forced to move its central operations from Gaza City to a location in southern Gaza Strip following the Israeli evacuation order issued on Friday, 13th of October. The agency warned that the water is now also running out in its new location as thousands of displaced civilians from northern Gaza continue to arrive. The statement said only in the past 24 hours, hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced. The exodus continues as people move to the southern parts of the Gaza Strip. More than 1 million Palestinians have been displaced in just 1 week alone. Philip Lazzarini added, "We need to truck fuel into Gaza now. Fuel is the only way for people to have safe drinking water. If not, people will start dying of severe dehydration, among them young children, the elderly and women. Water is now the last remaining lifeline." Lazzarini added, "I appeal for the siege on humanitarian assistance to be lifted right now." In video obtained by CNN on Saturday, scores of injured people can be seen being rushed into the Al-Aqsa Martyr Hospital in Deir al-Balah in the Gaza Strip. Emergency services at the hospital are seen rushing frantically to carry stretchers of people of all ages in need of medical attention. Basim Khoury, the chief executive officer of PharmaCare Group, said the Gaza Strip has a few small factories producing medical supplies, but at none of them were working right now. He said the situation for medicines is dire in Gaza. Unless we can push for humanitarian relief into Gaza, it will be a catastrophe. Basim Khoury added that if his staff on the ground reported hospitals facing lack of fuel to power generators, including the Al-Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest hospital. Heavy bombardment also meant that many generators were destroyed or damaged. Website of the Al Jazeera television network has also covered this story and tells us more. A United Nations human rights expert warned that Palestinians are in grave danger of mass ethnic cleansing and has called on the global community to mediate a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Francesca Albanese, United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Occupied Palestinian Territories, said the situation in the Gaza Strip has reached fever pitch. She added, "There is a grave danger that what we are witnessing may be a repeat of the 1948 Nakba and the 1967 Naxa, yet on a larger scale. The international community must do everything to stop this from happening again." She noted that Israeli public officials have openly advocated for another Nakba, the term for the events of 1947 to 1949, when over 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homeland during the hostilities that led to the establishment of the fake Israeli regime. The Naxa, which led to Israel's occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip in 1967, displaced 350,000 Palestinians. She added, "Israel has already carried out mass ethnic cleansing of Palestinians under the fog of war. Again, in the name of self-defense, Israel is seeking to justify what would amount to ethnic cleansing." Albanese said, "Any continued military operations by Israel have gone well beyond the limits of international law. The international community must stop these egregious violations of international law now, before tragic history is repeated." Israel's military on Thursday, 12th of October, ordered 1.1 million Palestinians trapped in the Gaza Strip to move to southern Gaza within 24 hours, ahead of an expected ground offensive on the enclave. The United Nations warned that the relocation of so many people is impossible and could have devastating consequences. The Hindu Daily has also covered the same story and tells us more. The World Health Organization, the WHO, warned Israel's evacuation order for Gaza amounts to a death sentence for vulnerable hospital patients. World Health Organization spokesperson Tariq Yasarevic said health authorities in Gaza have advised that it is impossible to evacuate vulnerable hospital patients within 24 hours as ordered by the Israeli military. Yasarevic said on Thursday, 12th of October, there are severely ill people whose injuries mean that only chances of survival is being on life support, such as mechanical ventilators. So moving those people is really a death sentence. Asking health workers to do so is beyond cruel. The European Union's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, has described Israel's directive that ordered 1.1 million Palestinians trapped in the Gaza Strip to move to southern Gaza within 24 hours as utterly unrealistic. Hamas, which runs the Gaza Strip, has told residents to ignore Israel's order, describing it as fake propaganda. The World Health Organization has already warned that hospitals in the Gaza Strip are at breaking point and called for a humanitarian corridor to allow in health workers and facilitate the evacuation of the sick and the injured. Yasarevic said that hospitals have only a few hours of electricity each day and are being forced to rely on generators to power critical functions, with patients in intensive care units and newborn babies among the most vulnerable. He said time is running out to prevent a humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza if fuel, water, food and life-saving health and humanitarian supplies cannot be urgently delivered to the Gaza Strip amid complete blockage of the territory. Meanwhile, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said on Friday, 14th of October, that the situation in Gaza has reached a dangerous new low after Israel warned 1.1 million residents of northern Gaza to flee south to southern Gaza following days of near-constant airstrikes on the embattled territory. Antonio Guterres said after days of airstrikes, the Israeli army has ordered the Palestinians in Gaza City and its surroundings to move to the south of the territory. He added, moving more than 1 million people across a densely populated war zone to a place with no food, water or accommodation when the entire territory is under siege is extremely dangerous and in some cases simply not possible. Guterres added, hospitals in south of Gaza are already at capacity and will not be able to accept thousands of new patients from northern Gaza. He added, the health system is on the brink of collapse. Morgues are overflowing. Many healthcare staff have been martyred whilst on duty, and there have been tens of attacks on health facilities in Gaza in the past few days. The United Nations Secretary General called for immediate humanitarian access throughout Gaza so that we can get fuel, food and water to everyone in need. Antonio Guterres added, even wars have rules. International humanitarian law and human rights law must be respected and upheld. Civilians must be protected and never used as shields. Also, United Nations aid chief Martin Griffiths said, the order to evacuate 1.1 million people from northern Gaza defies the rules of war and basic humanity. Martin Griffiths added, Gaza is under intense bombardment, roads and homes have been reduced to rubble. There is simply nowhere safe to go in Gaza.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with me. Sunday was day 9 of the war on Gaza. Palestinians who leave their homes or those who stay, to those in the north or those in the south, everyone's a target in the Gaza Strip, and there is no safe place. So far, over 2,600 Palestinians have been killed, with 700 of them being children, from newborns to octogenarians. No one is safe in Gaza. There is no electricity, no food, no fuel, and no water, although the Israelis have said that they will turn back on the water supply for southern Gaza. This is genocide, and the Israeli regime has the approval of most of the Western regimes. Now, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program to help me look at all of this. Out of London, activist, rapper, and host of the Watchdog podcast, Kareem Dennis. And out of Chicago, political commentator Shabir Rizvi. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let me start in London with Loki, or Kareem Dennis. Where do you think, let's look at where this all is going. I mean, those on the ground in Gaza say that despite going through several wars, they have never seen anything like what is happening now. Do you think the Israeli regime is responding in the way it is because of the major blow it received from the resistance on October the 7th, or how do you see it?
Yes, absolutely, but that was in and of itself a manifestation of the status of Zionism as a social arrangement. Essentially, it is a dying idea, which is becoming more and more difficult to sustain. You are talking about cruelty on an industrial scale to millions of people being a constant characteristic of Zionism. And that is becoming harder and harder to justify, not only to the world, but also even to the people that Israel relies upon for human material. We look at the recent situation. You saw flights coming from Germany, from Bulgaria, from other countries in Europe to come and collect people and take them out of the political entity known as Israel. And that was because this is becoming more and more of a tenuous situation by the day, and a harder to sustain situation. So the Palestinian story is essentially a story of staying power. And at the moment, it seems like the aim is to try and move up to 1.1 million people out of Gaza and put them into the Sinai Desert, where some form of tent city would be put there for them, according to Israeli officials.
Okay, so stay with me. We're going to get to that part of it, but let me get Shabir in on this discussion. Now, Shabir, the Zionist regime has bombed UN facilities, ambulances, journalists, people who were leaving via the safe passage corridor, which the regime had guaranteed. I mean, your comments on this, as each and every one of these actions, is a war crime, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, if you look at the actual, you know, start of the Israeli experiment, that in and of itself is a war crime. The entire idea of Israel has been a war crime from start to the very, you know, actions that we see carried out today. In fact, the last time I checked, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, 50 entire families are now wiped out from the ministry, from the Gaza Health Ministry. And on top of that, as you mentioned, they are targeting journalists, not only in Gaza, but also, as we see yesterday, a journalist from Reuters was killed. Reuters wouldn't even mention the name Israel. So you see the exact amount of power that the Zionist lobby has, to the point where members of UN humanitarian missions are being killed, journalists are being killed, yet none of these Western organizations or these organizations that are propped up by the West will even go so far as wag a finger at Israel. So you see the exact power of the Zionist lobby, while meanwhile the rest of the world, what we would call, for example, the Global South, sees exactly what Israel is. It's a dangerous political entity. We do need to stress the fact that it is a political entity, and it's committing ethnic cleansing before our very eyes while Western governments sit back and do nothing. In fact, some Western governments have gone so far as even encouraging it and writing a quote-unquote political blank check to the Zionist regime, allowing them to wipe out families, for example.
Well, Karim, do you think that the Israelis are playing a psychological game as well on the Palestinians? You had mentioned about the 1.1 or 1.2 million people that they've ordered to leave from the north to go to the south. And, of course, it's total chaos. And as I had said earlier, even the safe passage was even bombed. So what does it all mean? What do you think they're trying to do?
Well, essentially, Israel is trying to extract some form of price on what actually took place, which was the stability of the idea was massively shaken with an earthquake. You know, when we look at the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, the crime of genocide is actually defined as deliberately inflicting on a group of conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Well, when we look at the depriving of a civilian population of electricity, food, and water, water for which you cannot live for longer than 3 days without, then that certainly fits in the International Criminal Court's definition of genocide. When we look at the Geneva Convention's definition of willful killings as a war crime, according to Article 8, it would definitely measure up to what Israel has practiced. You have, for example, in Article 8, torture and inhuman treatment in the Geneva Conventions. What Israel has done since the 7th of October would certainly qualify in that way when we talk about the severe psychological suffering that Palestinians have had. This is nothing short of collective punishment and an attempt to delay the inevitable.
Well, Shabir, Hamas is telling people not to leave their homes in the north, as this is a trick by the Zionist regime to cause a new Nakba. It says that the regime want Palestinians to evacuate their homes and destroy them and create a situation where they will never be able to return to their homes and land again. Your thoughts about this?
Yeah, as we saw yesterday, families did try to evacuate and actually take the warning as is. And what we saw was that very humanitarian, that group of people actually through that corridor be annihilated by Israeli airstrikes. Where are these people expected to go where if they're being asked to retreat from the north on their way to the south, they get slaughtered? If they stay in the north, they get slaughtered. If they move south, they get slaughtered. In fact, the Rafah crossing itself has been bombed repeatedly, areas towards it. These people are trapped. And the water has been turned off. And now they can say, for example, that they turned on some aspects of water. You need electricity to run the water in Gaza. And the electricity is, they still have no energy there. They have no electricity. So this is just somewhat, you know, kind of pandering to some of the humanitarian, quote unquote, voices in the West that they're asking to turn on water and that they actually capitulated. But the reality is they didn't. The reality is on the ground, they are carrying out an ethnic cleansing. They're carrying out a genocide. And I think, you know, what Hamas said, that this is psychological warfare, that they're trying to trick you, they're absolutely correct, because they did try to evacuate and they were slaughtered.
And I mean, Karim, if we look at this situation, even hospitals have been bombed, and now hospitals are told, those that are in northern Gaza, that they have to relocate. Supplies are few, hospitals overcrowded, people being treated on the floor, and filled with critical patients. I mean, what does that mean when the Israeli regime tells the hospital staff to relocate to the south?
Well, essentially, it's a threat, because it's saying that if you do not leave, when we attack the hospital, you will be hurt. And let's be clear, Israel has formed. It has bombed several hospitals during this campaign, including a Dura hospital, which is a children's hospital, allegedly with white phosphorus, which of course is a prohibited weapon. So we are talking about war crime upon war crime. But what we are seeing is that Israel needs asymmetric warfare of striking from the air. It seems to fear the ground invasion, which it has threatened for a long time. And it seems to be trying to use the threat of the ground invasion as a bargaining chip with which it may be able to extract the prisoners of war who are in Gaza. And let's remember that Israel, up till now, since the 7th of October, has killed around 26 of the people that were taken captive. It has killed 26 Israelis in the airstrikes on Gaza. Is this the application of the Hannibal directives, which we know exists within the Israeli military? Time will, of course, tell. But you are seeing reports from those who were taken as captives from within the Green Line, saying that others who were with them were killed. Other hostages who were with them, or prisoners of war, were killed by the Israeli forces. So what does that do to even our perception of what is the death toll? Israel claims to have the bodies of 1,500 Palestinian fighters from the resistance factions within the Green Line. Do we know the conditions within which they were killed? Of course, Al Jazeera has produced an investigation which found some Palestinians within the Green Line being killed who were unarmed and had their hands up. Of course, there's been other investigations that have found similar evidence. So the question is open. You know, there are likely to be many Palestinians stuck under the rubble now as we speak. So even our perception of the death toll is massively skewed, I would argue.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Shabir, while all eyes have been on Gaza, Palestinians in the West Bank have been going through their own hell. Aggressive and increased Israeli patrols and raids are in place. And there's a lockdown on Palestinian areas, with over 50 Palestinians having been killed and over 500 arrested since the increased aggression began. Your take, where do you think the situation is going in the West Bank?
Yeah, I think the occupation forces are definitely increasing their hostilities towards the Palestinians in those areas. And actually, if you look at some of the videos of the Palestinians being martyred there, you see it's actually settler-accompanied violence. I believe there was a video that came out of a settler with a gun who shoots a Palestinian man that's missing an arm already, point blank. And he's accompanied by occupation forces. So I think this is a time where we're also going to see a lot of settler violence in the area. The settlers are more than likely take this time to take advantage of the situation and harass Palestinians, assault them more brutally, fight them, do what they have been doing, but now with more further occupation forces protection to allow them to get away with these horrific crimes. I think what we also can expect from the West Bank is its own form of resistance, as we've been seeing, not only in the form of civil resistance, as we've seen a lot of street protests, but resistance fighters also taking action against the occupation forces, heroically combating them in the streets, heroically taking shots at them wherever they can, accompanied with, of course, in between all these acts, protests that we see. I believe we saw protests at Ramallah, for example, among other acts of disobedience, because people are not going to sit around and just allow Israel to get away with ethnic cleansing. They're not going to tolerate an entire population being genocided before their eyes.
Well, Karim, we've been seeing more aggression by the Israelis towards southern Lebanon also, and Hezbollah has responded today by hitting 5 Israeli bases in the occupied territories. Do you think that this war is expanding?
Without a doubt, the war has expanded, not just regionally, but internationally, with the British sending a spy plane which they operate themselves over the top of occupied Palestine. Also, the U.S. sending several warships, essentially as a warning to any people of conscience in the world who would hope to come to the aid of the Palestinians. But essentially, all of that is an attempt to delay the inevitable. As I was saying about the invasion, or the potentially imminent invasion of Gaza, the Israeli military traditionally only has about 160,000 personnel within it. It has now claimed to have called up 200,000 people from the reserve military. That means they've taken 200,000 people out of the traditional economy. That, as well as the disabling of Ben Gurion Airport, will have major economic ramifications, and that can be seen on the Israeli stock market. But in terms of the push with Lebanon, Israel is now claiming that it can fight this war on two fronts. Since the beginning, it has bombed Syria, it has bombed Lebanon, and it has bombed, of course, Gaza. And as was said, you have seen around 50 people in the West Bank be killed too. But what Israel knows is that in Lebanon, there is a far more experienced and essentially well-armed fighting force that Israel fears. So can Israel really deal with the exertion of force it will take in the West Bank, as well as a ground occupation of Gaza, as well as major moves from the south of Lebanon and the north of Palestine? Would Israel be able to withstand that economically speaking? Would it be able to convince the settler population that what it was doing was somehow justifiable? I'm not sure. You would certainly see the society fall into chaos very swiftly.
Well, Shabir, Iran's foreign minister has said that Iran cannot remain a bystander while Israel is committing massacres against the Palestinians. What do you think that this could mean? And are we likely to see a wider scenario in dealing with this war?
Yeah, Iran has a lot of options on the table right now for when it says it will not stand idly by. A few of those would be, you know, U.S. military bases that are located across Iraq, across Syria, across the region, really. So if we want to talk targets, the United States has set itself up to be an easy target throughout all of these regions. So that could be one possibility of Iran getting involved. Another would be arming up its forces, pushing them in the ground war, not necessarily its its army, but of course SEPA or the IRGC would more than happily be able to, you know, back up its forces in Syria, for example. And then, of course, not just Iran, but there's other, people from the axis of the resistance ready to fight, too. Of course, we have in Yemen, Ansar Allah, who have pledged their full support to the Palestinian cause, waiting and, you know, letting people know that they are ready to strike back against the Israeli entity. Of course, we have in the north, Hezbollah, who we know that the Iran's foreign minister has met with just a few hours ago. Who are also, as you said, ready to fight back against the Israeli entity. So I think we could see a whole regional axis fight Israel within possibly hours to the next few days, even.
Well, Karim, you mentioned about what the U.S. and the U.K. Basically are doing and continuing trying to help this regime against humanity, basically. I mean, let's look at this perspective, what's going on, and this total lack of any kind of humanity and openly showing it. But at the same time, we also see movements, major movements inside of the UK and inside of the US by the people actually demanding a change from their governments and also demanding that Israel stops its genocide. So I want to look at both sides of that.
Well, essentially, what you have seen over the past few decades is the complete integration of the military and security states of Britain, the United States, and Israel. This is essentially a trilateral force which is able to project its power into these societies. And really, Britain has shown just how deeply integrated it is with the Israeli military establishment, even in comparison to something like 10 years ago or 15 years ago. It's far more deeply integrated with Israel. And so, therefore, you are seeing the attempt to crack down on people's ability to stand with the Palestinians in this society. You are seeing the targeting of those who are prominent in their support for the Palestinians. You are seeing attempts to really have even waving the Palestinian flag be open to interpretation as possibly a criminal offense by this particular government that we have here. Now, you have hundreds of thousands of people at least within British society who feel a deeply emotional affinity with the Palestinian people. And of course, that's a drop in the ocean when compared to the rest of the world. You know, the majority of states in the world came about through a process of decolonization. They are former colonial states. Formerly colonized states. They relate to the Palestinians as seeing themselves as post-colonial subjects. They see themselves in the Palestinians. They have this deep affinity with them. And of course, Britain, as a country that occupied 14.7 million square miles of the planet, it has people from all around the world in it, particularly in the capital and other big cities. And these are people who will not let go of Palestine easily. They are people that in this country who would be willing ultimately to face legal sanction by the government for standing with Palestine. It wouldn't be the first time. It has happened before, and people would be willing to do it. You also see inspiring movements in this country shutting down Israeli arms factories. So while the political system and the military and intelligence establishment goes one way, I would say that members of the public generally are going the other way. Zionism as a top-heavy movement is rarely successful at winning hearts and minds. And this campaign has been another example of that failure.
Well, Shabir, do you think the equation in Palestine has changed forever since October 7? Because before that, of course, the Zionist regime always tried to portray itself as invincible and also had very good control over PR, if you want to call it that, but they're really beginning to lose that front also. I mean, your take on that, has it changed forever?
I think without a doubt it's been changed forever. The bloody nose that the Zionist regime has been dealt since last week, it can't be clean. As you see, with the ongoing operation led by all factions of the Palestinian resistance, Israel's having a hard time containing this. They're resorting to even thinking about a ground war in Gaza, which, if you asked them a month ago, they would have never even thought was on the table, really. As far as PR goes, we do see, at least across the West, the unified effort of state, of heads of state, of media, of influencers and celebrities coming out in unison, trying to do PR, essentially, for the Zionist regime. But as you can see, with the millions of people across the world emerging onto the streets, and for example, just here in Chicago, we had 10,000 people show up yesterday for a Palestine rally, another 10,000 on Wednesday, and 15,000 people exactly 7 days ago. You know, no matter what unified effort is being made to clean up for the Zionist crimes of war and ethnic cleansing, the people stand with Palestine easily, without a doubt. These narratives are being openly challenged, and it's gone as far as, you know, state accounts of Israel using AI-generated images to try to convince the people that, you know, they're the victim of this, when in reality, the Palestinian people have been under attack by the Zionist regime since 1948, and right, even beyond that with British colonialism.
All right, and on that note, thank you both for being with me. Kareem Dennis, a low-key activist, rapper, and host of the Watchdog podcast out of London. Shabir Rizvi, political commentator out of Chicago. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and other group right here in Tehran.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
الله هو ذا الرحمن الله هو ذا المنان لا إله إلا الله.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atal, the host of this program. Sheikh Karimi from the Islamic House of Qom is ready to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh Karimi, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the ways in order to know your imam. In fact, what are the steps to be taken in order to be more familiar or to have or access a type of knowledge regarding the imam of our time? Of course, this could happen at the time of the infallible imams when they were alive, and now at the time of the major occultation or Ghibat al-Kubra of Imam Asr. So what are the ways and what are the steps?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are some narrations in both Shia and Sunni collections of hadith. And unfortunately, sometimes as Muslims, we do not pay enough attention to these narrations. And I would sincerely ask our, especially Sunni brothers and sisters, and of course the Shia as well, to read and study these narrations and contemplate upon them, the narrations talking about knowing the Imam of the time. Of course, as Shia at least, we have the minimum knowledge of these Imams. We believe in 12 Imams.
Yes.
But the question is from our Sunni brothers and sisters that who is the Imam of your time?
Yes.
Because the Holy Prophet is asking all the Muslims that in each time and era, you need to know the Imam of your time. And otherwise,